This is an oral history interview with Otto, who goes by Barney Schosser, in Durango, Colorado. And we're in Mr. Schosser's home in Durango. And Mr. Schosser has a long history in Durango, working in the hardware business and helping Fred Krager set up Krager's hardware store, and other topics that we'll get into in great deal. And the interview is being conducted on October 22nd, 1997. And the interviewer is Todd Ellison, representing the Center of Southwest Studies, Fort Lewis College in Durango, Colorado.
And my mother was born in Bavaria, Germany. My father was 17 years old when he immigrated to the States. My mother arrived in Durango when she was 7 years old. My father was a few years older than my mother. My father migrated to the Camp Bird mine out of Ouray, Colorado, and that's where the immigrants were sent at that time because there was a lot of mining going on up there. And he became ill, and they brought him to Durango, to the hospital. Yeah. And he never went back there. He found work here. He worked for what was then called the old Porter Fuel Company. This was a mining company up in, I guess you call it Wildcat Canyon now. And then from there, why he was employed at the American Smelting and Refining Company. That's where he met my mother's father, and at that time met my mother. My father and mother were married in Durango here in 1900 on New Year's Day. And after they were married here, the Ute Indians had traded some land from Ignacio, and this left the land in the area where my father homesteaded in Cottonwood Canyon, south of, at that time was called Griffith, Colorado. And he homesteaded this ranch in 1903, and that's where I was born. That's where the whole family was born. In our family, there was six of us. It was four boys and two girls. And we were raised on a dairy farm there, which was where my parents continued to live until I was about 20 years old, then we sold the ranch. And at that time, in 1936, I went to work for the Jackson Hardware Store. But previous to this, what was called a Thompson School on the Florida Mesa, which is no longer standing. It was 1 mile. We had to walk 1 mile to school. And this is where I met my future wife. She came there to teach school, and she lived 1 year with my parents before we sold the ranch. And it was kind of a long history about our relationship as we off and on went together. For both of us had obligations. I did, and she wanted to finish her college. And I might state that she was, at that time, one of the first students, Fort Lewis College, at the old campus, the first year they had college there. And she was, I can't recall the number of people that attended that college. And then later on, she graduated from, years later, after she taught school for a number of years, each year she went to school. And to get her degree, and she finally got what they called a lifetime degree. They don't issue those anymore. And she came back here and was finally employed by the school district 9R. At that time, after they had consolidated and closed down all of the rural schools out on the Florida Mesa, and bussed all the kids here in Durango. And I continued to work at the Jackson Hardware Store. I went there as an employee, really, of the John Deere Implement Company when they had the agency there, and I stayed on and worked for them. I was employed there for 21 years. But in the meantime, then she graduated, and my wife and I were married in 1944 here in Durango at the Presbyterian Church. And we both became members of the Presbyterian Church after we were married. Hmm. But we had attended church a long time before.
Before we get much further, can I ask you some questions?
Yes.
About what, how do you think your dad and your mom's parents heard about Durango when they were immigrating from...
Well, my father, they were bringing a lot of the immigrants. On the way to the United States from Austria, where he came from, and his background, of course, was he lost his family over there, and he had one sister that was left. And they didn't get along too well. She was an opera singer in Vienna. And so he just decided on his own to come to the United States. My mother's family was migrated to the United States. And they came to meet relatives that had come over prior to this, and they they did meet this family at a little place called Villa Grove, north of Alamosa, Colorado. Mm-hmm. It's a little mining town. And his work was not plentiful there. They migrated to Durango. Mm-hmm. And so from there, that's how they both came to Durango.
Uh-huh. Now, and you mentioned your dad worked at the Porter Fuel Company.
Yes.
Mining there. Do you know
coal mining?
The coal mining. Yeah. Do you know anything about the coal company? Did you hear any stories about
that? Well, I have heard a little. Of course, that was before my time. Of course, right. I can still remember when there were buildings up there, the old boarding house, and it was, they had coke ovens there where they made coke out of the coal for, I guess they used those in steam engines on the railroad. I'm not sure about that.
And this, the mine and the buildings were on Wildcat Canyon Road?
Yes, they were. You can still see traces of where those mines were.
Is that
there.
Beyond, when you drive past Rafter J?
No, it's before you get to Rafter J, on this side of the...
Okay.
The hill, just before you go around that curve up there.
On the left side?
On the right hand
side.
Going.
Yeah. And
Do you know anything more about that?
Not much, no.
With a collection of their records up at this
time? No, I really don't know a whole lot about that, because when he left there, he went to work for the what was then the old American Smelting and Refining Company here, where there were trains every day hauling ore down from Silverton to be processed here, and so on. That lasted until, I can't remember what year they finally closed that down, but he left there and after he married my wife and homesteaded this ranch out on Florida Mesa.
Huh.
And had a beautiful dairy ranch out there. So that's where I was born and raised.
Wow. And about how many cattle did they have?
We milked about anywhere from 10 to 20 head by hand each day.
Wow. And now
my mother made butter. We had a large... My father was quite a mechanic, and he had a blacksmith shop there. It was driven by gasoline power, and he sharpened the plow shears and did a lot of smith work for the farmers around who were there in those years. And I guess I would say that we raised other things. We raised hogs, and we sold all of our products to the grocery stores and to the stores and to the general public here in Durango. My mother had a regular butter route. We came into Durango once every Saturday, and she had doctors and lawyers and people that bought our ranch-made butter.
And would she go to their home?
Yes, we'd deliver it right to their home.
Wow. Now, people don't have dairy herds anymore around here.
Not.
What happened to all that?
Well, they do have, I can't recall the exact year, but, you know, they came out with the new law of sanitary dairy farms. Mm-hmm. Of course, I was in the hardware business at that time, and I worked on milking machines and this type of thing a lot out in the country. And there are some dairies still here. It's a friend of mine has, but they're in picked up by Metagold or some of those in bulk plants and delivered here in Durango. I guess they got a plant right south of Durango over here. Yeah. Those people milk up to 60, 75 head of cows every day, you know. So. But there are not many of those left. The one family that I remember is on one of the old ranches out on the Florida Mesa, the son, the Letty boys, still run one.
And tell me about the town of Griffith. Was it really a town?
It was a railroad station, and it had a post office and a general store. And it was right close to the old Florida Grange, which is not there anymore. The Florida Grange has moved just north of there. But it was a station, and that's our mail was around the ranch was delivered by a mail man out there, right to everybody's property.
Wow.
Yeah.
And from Elmore's store, where was the post office?
The post office was about a mile and a half, 2 miles south of Elmore's store, and on the left there.
And do you know how the town was named Griffith?
No, I don't. I can't answer that.
Yeah.
I think there was a family, and some of the family's still living here in Durango. There were the Griffith people that owned a lot of land, and I think this is where the name came from.
And then of the, there were four boys and two girls. Where were you in the lineup?
Well, we were...
you personally?
We were next to the youngest. I still have a younger brother here. And I have an identical twin brother, Leo Schozier. He still lives here. He was at one time associated with the Herb Williams Lumber Company when it was in business, the old Durango Lumber Company. And he had his own woodworking shop for a number of years, and retired, and he's taking care of his wife. She's not very well.
And how often do you see your brother?
Oh, we talk every other day or so, and I don't see him too often. I get out, go out and see them. They live out in the Animas Trailer Park in a big trailer. He sold all of his property here in town. He owned two or three houses here. Oh. He sold those out. My youngest brother still lives out on Florida Road, and I have a sister that lives here yet. She is at a birthday the other day. Is 92 years old, Mary Schumacher. Mm-hmm. And my oldest, see, we were in line. The girls, both of them, were older than any of the boys. Then there was my brother, John, who was he was with the Burnett Construction Company here for years in the State Highway Department of Maintenance. Then Leo and I, and then my youngest brother, Frank. Hmm. His family have quite a family here in Durango. Hmm. His daughter's husband is a large contractor builder here in town, Bruce Hamer. I don't know, maybe you've heard of him. So we still have a few family around, but part of them are gone.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, it's kind of a strange question, but what's it like having an identical twin?
Well, I can tell you a lot of experiences. Uh-huh. Believe me, this is interesting. When we were, they always had community dances out in the country and so on, and my dad liked to go to those dances, and he took us along when we were 14, 15 years old, you know, and then we would go to those dances when we were younger, and we would dress alike, except our necktie, and during the dance times, we'd go out and change our necktie. And if we had a date or something, why, we was... So it was kind of confusing. There was a time in our life when my mother couldn't hardly tell us apart. That's right. Huh. And other than that, our personalities, I don't think, are exactly the same. We don't really... A lot of issues we don't agree on. But it was... It had a lot of advantages and had a lot of disadvantages, so... That's about the best I can say about that.
That's interesting. Do you think you tried to be alike, or did you try to be different?
Well, no, I don't think we tried to be alike. He led a different kind of life than I did. I got into business when I was fairly young, and when we left the ranch. But... We, in later years, didn't seem to do a lot of things together. We had different opinions about different things. We had lived. I always was, of course, I married a teacher in my life, and she was real education-minded, and I would say that she was, I would just... received, she was a charter member of the AAUW group here. She was a charter member of the old Beta Sigma Phi girls that were started here, and she was a member of Neil Delphian Club, the Presbyterian Church, and the Presbyterian Women's Church. She belonged to a lot of organizations that she believed, and she just loved her children, her kiddies in school. We never had any children of our own, but we had everybody else's children. I guess that's
wonderful.
Yeah.
While we're at that point, maybe you could, for the record, tell us about the dress that you donated last week.
Oh, I'll try it. That was this Beta Sigma Phi group. I think this is how the thing originally started. Was very active in what we call the old Spanish Trails Fiesta here. This was associated with an international rodeo association. Part of their contest was held here in Durango. It was a big event. It was really a big event. And they used to go over to fairgrounds downtown before, walk around town, give out programs and so on. With these girls, everybody at that time wore Western costumes. That was kind of mandatory. Everybody in business wore big hats and cowboy boots and all this stuff to represent. And so she fell upon the idea, because she always liked Navajo jewelry. She was like, we used to go out on the Navajo before I traveled out there a lot and mess around. And of course, the company I work for, as you well know, are still in the Indian. Some of the people are still in the Indian business. They're the Clark family. They used to go out, camp out on the Navajo reservation. So she decided she'd like to have a Navajo dress. This girl was working for the Cherry Creek Lodge, a Navajo girl from Shiprock. And between this girl, she furnished the know-how, and she and Kay Franklin made this dress. And then I collected a lot of the coins that were on it, and I guess that's about how it came about. And when she used to give programs here in Durango to the different schools, the Indian programs, at different times, even after she retired. And of course, she always wore this dress, so people were real curious about it. But it is a real Navajo style dress, and it was actually designed and made by this Navajo girl.
Hmm. That's wonderful to know that story about.
Yeah.
It.
And she still did a program not very many years ago up at the Riverview School for the teachers up there one afternoon. And she always wore this dress. And it's a different occasion. We had quite a square dance group here. But during the fiesta, when I was with the Jackson Hardware Store, because I eventually bought an interest in the store, so I was a partner in the store, we would block off, during the fiesta days, we would block off the whole block. We got permission to do this from the police, the city, and have the Burnett Construction Company pull a big flatbed out there in the street. And we had street square dances out there. I did some of the calling for them. And, we had different collars, square dance collars. But I would... we were able to have all of the electricity we wanted, because I would open up the store and plug everything into the store. And that was quite an event. If you go back to think about those years, I worked 8 years on the entrance gate over there taking money for those rodeos. I and another fellow was pretty much our job. And we were putting in, I can't tell you the exact figure now, but I know that sometimes we had over the 3 days registered probably around 5,000 people through those gates of the Rodeo Association. And we had all that money over there, and we got worried about somebody coming holding us up, so we finally got them to, we were deputized so we could have some authority, but we had to have somebody carry that money, because that was a lot of money at that time to be carrying around in one of these carpenter aprons is what we wore. Yeah. And after they quit the association, then of course it's dropped back to what we have now. You know, some people in Durango took it over and sort of managed the fiesta program, but at that time it was part of the National Rodeo Association, and the contestants all were, this was part of their contest for the year of whether they were going to be champion bronc riders or whatever they would be. So it was really, this town was really booming there for Saturday and Sunday for a few years.
And this yesterday. Maybe was at its peak in the late 50s, would you say?
Yes, I would say in the late 50s. Uh-huh.
And what did they use the proceeds, the profits, for? What was that money used for?
Practically all of it was used for contest money, prize money, and many times they came up short, really. Uh-huh. To pay all the expenses. But I think this was one of the reasons maybe it had to close down. I can't really answer that.
Now, another thing that comes to mind is Fred Krager mentioned once that the first photo finish horse race was on the fairgrounds.
That's right.
Uh-huh. Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't know much about it.
But that's true.
But it is true. Yeah, I knew of it. But I really didn't know. Yeah, they had. And at that time, for a few years there, they got permission and had the National Racing Association, and they were brought in here. You know, that's quite an event for those. Mm-hmm. So they had national race stock from all over the country.
Mm. And what kind of racing was it?
Horse racing.
With riders on the
With
horse?
Riders on, yes.
Not buggies or something?
No.
Uh-huh. Huh. Now tell me some of... Here we have the street cleaning day.
Yeah, let's go.
Tell me about the Thompson School. What can you remember about that?
I'll tell you about it. There was a Thompson School and there was a Cottonwood School all in the same district. The Cottonwood School was down, and then I'll get to the Thompson School, was south of Elmore Store, right about where you make the turn to go east, go under the airport, off to the right. Vince Chapman, I think, lives on most of that land right now, and that school is gone. And my older sisters and so on had to go from our ranch up the valley there to go to that school. So my father and a fellow by the name of Bill Mason and a few of the others finally convinced them that they needed a school down near, closer for those southern people that were living down there. So this Thompson School was built, and I don't know if I can explain exactly where it was, but it was just about almost a mile from our house down the canyon where we lived. We had a beautiful ranch down there. My father had sense enough to adjudicate all the spring water that he wanted and all this type of thing. Then there was the Long Lane School, and I don't know if I can explain this, but south of, do you know anything about the Laura Florida Mesa School at all?
No.
Well, as you go south towards Farmington, and after you leave the top of the Farmington Hill, you go down and there's a road that turns to the left off of the main highway, and there's some developments out in there. There's a lot of farmland, but just 4 miles from there, over to the next corner, that's where the school was. There's an old barn still standing there. I drove by there the other day to look at it. I can't get into the ranch anymore because it's all closed off. It's owned by a fellow by the name of Linder, and Linder, of course, is a very famous, owns ball clubs back east, and I don't know what all he owns, but he bought up a lot of property here, and he owns all of that. But that's where the old Thompson School was, and in that school, was just the 8th grade. And the teacher that came there always had to board with some family that living in that area.
Just the one grade? 8th grade?
No.
through
up through the eighth grade.
Yeah.
The Cottonwood School had through the 10th grade. They had a partial high school up there. And that's why some of us never got any farther than that in high school. But it was there until they consolidated the school district and closed it down.
Hmm. That happened in...
I can't tell you the exact year that it happened, but I think that it was somewhere... Let me think a minute here. Because my sisters were going to school before that school was built. My guess is was happened, I would say, somewhere around 1915 or something like that.
Well, that early, huh?
Yeah. Mm. And that's what then they went to work and also got the mail route set up down there so they get the mail delivered to our corner.
Oh, I'm going to turn this over before it runs out on us.